Hey guys, welcome to the Dead Set Legends podcast. I'm Gus Warland. I'm here with Jude Bolton and Wendell Saylor. And today, looking forward to spending the next couple of hours with you talking all things sport in a Sydney lockdown. I hope you're looking after yourselves. Jude, how's your week been, brother?
Yeah, it's been good in lockdown. I think my wife, Lynette, just seems to have an innate ability to buy a flat pack and ask me to put it together. This week, I put a four-poster bed together for my daughter.
It's like MacGyver.
Let's just say I'm not too handy on the tools, but I got it done.
Good on you, mate. What about you, Wendell? A few games of golf this week. You've been relaxing?
No, I actually didn't. I actually took some time out to just explore, I suppose, Wollongong a bit. A lot of bushwalks, obviously a lot of beaches. Just have a bit of time out because I find sometimes just playing golf and being around people, I just need a bit of me time. So, yeah. But I'm serious. But I just want to say congratulations to all the women in and about rugby league, women in league round. For me, my mum has been a massive part of what I've done. And then my wife, my daughter, who makes me better every day, who holds me accountable, and my mother-in-law. So I'd like to thank you because once upon a time we played sport and that, you know, it'd be giving the mums the jerseys and stuff and the socks and that. But to see how far we've progressed, not only in a working culture, but also in rugby league, like, you know, Kate Page, I've worked with her women in league stuff, and the women that play the game too, they take it to a new level. Girls like Kezzy Apps and stuff I've worked with in and around. So well done, and it's a celebration of, you know, a wonderful thing.
Well said. Coming up next, we've got the five toughest players that Dell played with or against.
Okay, can I just say this too? When we do these things, I want people to understand these are my Wendell Saylor, 220 games, 3 premierships, okay? World Cup.
Is it 3 premierships?
Yes.
Do you count the Super League premiership?
Yes, I do.
See, that's not a premiership.
It is.
We'll give you half points. Two and a half.
3, anyway.
Honestly.
So how many you won, anyway? You won 2, Jude, haven't you?
2.
Yeah, well, I've won half more than you. Anyway, I wasn't great at maths at school. Okay, guys, these are the guys in the mix, but I'll give you my 5 toughest, and I want you to understand this. It's not just the biggest, most aggressive player. It's tough, you know, pound for pound, you know, players that I've seen.
Mentally.
Yep, mentally, yes.
Yeah.
So, you know. Okay.
Is this 5?
Yeah, so I'll go from 5, okay? So from 5, I'm going to go Cam Smith. Just to play that many games, to play in the middle, doesn't miss many games, Cam Smith for me is there, okay? Number 4, this guy was tough, fractured eye socket in the grand final, went on and got man of the match, best on ground. I think his brother could have got the Clive Churchill, Sam Burgess. And I got to play against Sam only once, in the All-Stars game, and there's a shot of him, because I think he came in for, I'm not sure, with a Dave Taylor or someone, but I just like, Sam Burgess is a bloke who leads from the front, you know, he's the big alpha male, he's the lion, so Sam Burgess is there, this guy here, I played against him, tough as nails, and mate, because we grew up together, and not that he scared you, but you knew if you ran anywhere near him, you got to use your footwork. If you want to run straight at him, he's going to cut you in half. And I saw him in 1995 take on the Bulldogs forward pack by himself. And there was like Dean Pay, you know, there's Jared McCracken, all these tough guys. This bloke was a young tearaway forward. It's Triple M's own Gordon Tullis.
Yeah.
Mate, and he was scary, mate, because, mate, the eyes would roll with Gordy. So I played against him, played with him. And let me tell you, it's better to have you on the side.
Yes.
I remember warm up, he'd look at me.
Well. Yeah,
he'd be mucking around, Gordy mucking around. It'd be like the bell to go 15 minutes. And then you could just see something go in his head and then his eyes roll. And he goes, "We right, Del?" "Mate, yeah, I'm right. We're right. Mate, there's just something that just went click." Okay. Number 3 for me, this guy here, he was outstanding. Always loved watching him play.
Number 2, isn't it?
Sorry, 2.
Did say Maswell's in a strong point.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Number 2, Les Davidson.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about sledging. I was coming from the wing. When you're a big 100-kilo winger, you don't have to make too many tackles. I could come in and be a bit lippy and then go back out, especially when you know you've got Alan Cairn there, Trevor Gilmeister, Glenn Lazarus. Anyway, as I come in, I'm sledging like some of the boys from Cronulla and that. Anyway, they're packed in the scrum, and then my forwards are getting into me. So I said, "Shut up, Del, go back to the wing, you know." And as I'm standing there, Les Davidson puts his head up, and he goes, "F off back to the wing." And you know what? I couldn't put it in reverse quick enough. Les Davidson is that tough. I think he hit Jason Stevens. As he punched Jason Stevens, he hit someone else, and someone did their knee on the way down. I'm not sure who it was against. Someone will let me know that. So Bundy is one of the scariest blokes and is fitter now than when he played.
Bundy.
Everyone called him Bundy. And number one, you know, you don't get scared on the field too much, but this guy scared me. He was tough, and he's brave for a number of reasons. Okay? So 1997, we played up in the Cowboys, and I hated getting tackled. Mick Hancock taught me, you know, just...
Didn't he carry on every time he was tackled?
So I had a bit of Mick Hancock carry on, and as I was getting tackled, and I'm
wriggling.
I'm a bit on myself, and then I just hit out like this. And as I hit out, I go bang. And I've hit this bloke fair on, and I don't care who I hit because I'm not saying I'm a great fighter, but I think I'm brave enough to take on anyone. So we're playing the Cowboys. As I went bang, I looked up, and mate, I was thinking, pray for me. It was Ian Roberts. Ian Roberts. The last person I went, and I love Ian Roberts. I swear I love him. And that stage, all this fear, just like, I thought, I'm gone here, mate. And the person who saved me, and I didn't know because there was three players there, and out of the players that I could lash out at was Ian Roberts. And as I hit him, it was like a punch. It's gone bang like that.
You don't have to keep hitting yourself. This is radio, mate.
It doesn't matter. I'm trying to react.
Okay.
There is a camera here too, so they probably will post that.
Okay.
So as I'm reacting, as mate, Gordon Tullis is standing there, and I get up, and Robbo goes, you want to go, Del? And I'm like, you know when you're a kid and you're trying to be brave? And I go, yeah. Gordon Tullis stepped in front of me. As soon as Gordon Tullis, he goes, mate, Robbo, go away. As soon as Gordon Tullis stepped, I could not put in reverse quick enough. And even after the game, we're walking off, and the Cowboys crowd, they're booing me. They're booing the boo, boo, because they thought I must have had a go at his sexuality and that. Not in a million years. And Robbo, absolute gentleman. We've done the Mardi Gras together and stuff. And, mate, he's one of the bravest blokes I know, one of the toughest blokes I know. Mate, he had that many injuries. Even, I think at the Cowboys, he was virtually playing on one leg. But Gordon Tullis saved my life that day. And Ian Roberts was such a gentleman. He shook my hand and he goes, mate, there's no problems. We'll just leave it there. And I said, yeah, no problems, Robbo. Whatever you want, mate.
Beautiful. Good stats, mate. Good list. Talking about Paul Gallen, boys, he's a boxer now, isn't he? And he's a fantastic boxer. He signed a new contract for 3 more fights set to take place over the next 18 months. He's 39 years of age now, and he has just said, look, bring it on. So who would we like him to fight? And we'd love to throw that out there on 133353. Which NRL player, former or now current, do you want Paul Gallen to fight? We'd love to get your list after this. And the best caller gets a really nice little voucher from JB Hi-Fi. Who would you like, Jude?
Someone like a Victor Bradley or someone, I don't know, one of the tough blokes.
Someone feisty?
Yeah, someone feisty who's willing to throw him. What about you, Del?
Mate, I reckon, honestly, Junior Paulo fought him a couple of years ago. Junior Paulo's fitter now and I think mentally a lot stronger. I reckon Junior Paulo and him would be a really good fight because I think Junior Paulo, he went the distance with him. And I think now, because the game's evolved and changed, him and I tell you who else, Darcy Lussick. Lussick fought Hodjo and Darcy Lussick is actually... He's built strongly. Darcy Lussick, I'm not sure if his old man was a boxer, but that Lussick is a tough family. I reckon Darcy Lussick and Gal would be okay. I know Gal would win, but Lussick, I reckon if Lussick wants to test himself, I reckon that's a fight that he could take on and I reckon and get paid well for.
Kane Evans?
I don't know if Kane can fight. I've seen Kane in a video.
I'd love to see Kane Evans and Will Chambers. What about Chambers? There's a few on the socials coming through right now. Chambers, Jai Arrow, Tevita Pangai Jr.
Yep.
Another one, Chambers, another Jai Arrows. Hargraves?
Hargraves I reckon will be good. But I reckon Hargraves...
Matt Lodge?
Huh?
Matt Lodge?
Yeah. Look, I mean, they're all good. But look, just because you're tough doesn't mean you can box. That's why, you know, when people say, look, I've done a couple of those boxing things. Mate, I respect the sport too much. If you're going to do it, I've done a couple, and they're so hard to do, and you've got to respect the sport. That's why when I meet boxers, and we've seen boxers, you know, whether it's Jeff Fennick, and, you know, we've had a few guys in here, and it's a tough sport, mate. It's a lonely place out there.
That's why Gell's, hats off. He's been able to transition into it and actually,
And very, very brave.
And you know, I can't believe his people.
Josh McGuire is another one that's come through by
actually,
many people.
Actually, Josh McGuire and him would be a good fight, because Josh McGuire has got a bit of, he's got a background in boxing, so... Even though, I know, not everyone knows this, but for the people who don't know this, Josh is actually blind in one eye.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Is he?
Yes. I'm not sure if it was an accident and when he was playing a game. I'll try and follow this through, but we had him on radio one day and he's actually blind in his left eye, I think. So, and he's tough as nails, Josh McGuire.
We'll go straight to Vinny in Manly. Vinny, who would you like Paul Gallen to fight in the first of his 3 fights?
I'd like to see him fight Paul Kent.
Well, he's a golden glover, Kenty, from the past.
Yeah, I think when he was 17 or 18.
Yeah, you never know.
But I reckon James Hooper would be more suited to him.
Okay.
Nah, I think Paul Kent would pull a lot more pay-per-views.
That's true. Good, so true. What about Hoops? Do you reckon Hoops is a decent fighter?
Yeah, I think Hoops trains. Hoops boxes. Yeah, he'd go right. He'd back himself too, I reckon.
Okay, let's go to Jack now in Sydney. G'day, Jack. Who would you like Gallen to fight?
Mel Meninga.
Oh, Big Mel.
Yeah, what about Big Mel, Del?
Mel's 60 now. Like Mel, yeah.
Too many?
In his day,
Mel. I think one of the AFL players sledged Mel Meninga. I think Jacko sledged Mel Meninga. And Mel knocked him out in the first round.
And that was that. Let's go to Daniel now. He's at the Bunnings in Albion Park. G'day, Daniel.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Very good. Who would you like Gow to fight?
Mate, Matt Cooper's been spoiling for an MMA fight with him for a while.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really? On a side note, I did run into Dell at the driving range at Windang the other day. He was having some cheeky KFC and a couple of beers.
Oh, wow. Very good, Dell.
I don't know if I said beers, but...
Thank you, Dan.
You sure it wasn't Macca's because they sponsor our show, yeah. and then I was having some soft drink, yeah.
Did you have KFC?
Didn't hit a ball, though.
Yeah.
Thank you, Daniel. Did you have a little cheeky... Dirty
yeah.
Bird?
Yeah, I did.
Well played, big fella. Yeah. Let's go to Trent now in Wilton. G'day, Trent.
Mate, none other than the Big Dell. It's got to be the Big Dell. State of Origin vibe, mate. New South Wales versus Queensland. Dell's always talking about scoring 3 tries a game. He's man of the match. He's won World Cups. It's time to step up, mate, and have a crack at the Big Gal.
I've already boxed, mate.
You stepped in with Wayne Carey.
I'm a lover, not a fighter. I fought, mate. If you need to do research, mate, I fought Liam Messam. I think I was 36 at the time. He was 26 in All Black. So I've done my time there.
How'd you go in that fight?
He beat me in points. So I went 3 rounds with him. That's just what I do, mate. I was older, a bit slower, a bit fatter, but tough enough.
Good work.
So thanks, mate.
You good there,
Del? No, be honest, I think Gal would beat me. What Gal's done is amazing. He's next level. I'd go all right, but I reckon I'd last 2 rounds against Gal. He's a next-level weapon.
Thank you for the call, Trent. Tonight, boys, the second Bledisloe Test match. And if you're talking rugby and you're talking legends, there's not many bigger than this bloke. Tim Horan's on the line from Stan Sport. G'day, Tim. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks, Gus. Boys, thanks for having me on the show.
Mate, it's an absolute pleasure. So close last week. And, of course, if we kick our goals, it could have been all the difference. But it must give us a huge amount of confidence going into the match tonight.
Yeah, it does. I think the way the Wallabies played, they're obviously a younger bunch of players now. They're probably not as shy as what we thought they would be. And I think, you know, but when you look at the All Blacks, how good they are, that they really put their foot on the accelerator in about a 15-20 minute period and probably blew the scoreline out. The Wallabies did well to score 4 tries and come back. But yeah, it's a big match tonight, isn't it, to try and get this Bledisloe Cup, get one hand on it, and then go to Perth in 2 weeks' time and have a chance of it, I think. But, you know, and Wendell would probably agree, it's this young team is building to something special in a couple of years' time. But as we know, sporting fans, rugby fans aren't that patient.
Yeah. I like what I'm seeing at the moment, Tim. I'm liking, from that French test, I see there's a real self-belief. And obviously, when Corabetti got sent off and that, they found something. They found the old Wallaby spirit. So I'm sitting at home and I'm going, yeah, boys. And it's the first time for a long time that I felt reconnected with the Wallaby spirit. But I want to ask you this. You played many games at Eden Park. I've played many games there. I've won plenty of rugby league games there. But for some reason, it's not just in your head. There's a real belief in the All Blacks, and we just need to get that monkey off our back. How do we do that? And hopefully these guys can do it.
Yeah, I think when you beat the All Blacks, you don't get many chances to beat them. You really got to unsettle Aaron Smith. He's one of the best halfbacks in the world at number 9, and to do that, you know, the forward pack really have to respond. I mean, I like the inclusion of Lachie Swinton at number 6. Mm. You know, Michael Hooper's a wonderful captain, and it's really down to the forwards. Wendell, you and I played in the backs. We didn't worry too much about the forwards, you know, but hopefully if this forward pack can really be a lot more aggressive in that first 20 to 30 minutes and take it to the All Blacks, Aaron Smith's ball gets disrupted at the back. So that's how we've got to play.
Tim, speaking of Aaron Smith, he had his 100th test cap last week, and we saw the amount of respect for both sides. You could see Michael Hooper present him.
Wasn't that a nice touch?
It was lovely down in the rooms there. But I guess you've got to put that respect to the side. And as you said, the aggressiveness, how hard do they need to be?
Well, I think they need to pull something out. I think, as I said, the forward pack for the Wallabies is really important. Matt Tamua back in the centres and Corabetti back in the side. That's really important. He's been the best player, hasn't he, for the last probably 18 months, 2 years for the Wallabies. And it's going to be a big loss when he goes to play in Japan at the end of the year. But I think you need results now. And I think Dave Rennie, the coach, and Wendell, you've probably seen this, the culture that he's trying to cultivate off the field with this team. You know, he gets on the guitar and sings songs with the players and is really connected to them. I think you're right. Del, after that French series and the new Wallaby gold jersey, that it really just unites the crowd. And, you know, you win a test match the next day, people are walking their dogs or they're going for a jog in a gold jersey. It's quite a powerful pace.
Tim, I've been lucky enough to play with some of the great Wallabies, George Smith, you know, Georgie Gregan, and that. I didn't get to play with you or John Eales, but you two guys are guys I admired. What do you see with the change of the culture of the Wallabies now? And I know also that I think Wayne Bennett tried to get you to rugby league as well. So, and you stayed in rugby and was loyal. I probably should have learnt that.
Oh, I think Wendell, it was interesting. I mean, when we played in that era, you know, George Gregan and John Eales, I'm lucky enough to win World Cups and Bledisloe Cups. I think we just had a big trust in the player next year, and that was really important for us, both on and off the field, and, you know, families were part of it. I think this current Wallaby team, they have a lot of respect for the history of the game and what it means to people around Australia, or if you're overseas watching a Wallaby game. But they also want to go and create their own history, and they think they know that now's the time, the next 2 years, with what Dave Rennie's trying to do with this team. So I think it's a new era of Australian rugby. You know, obviously new broadcasts with Channel 9 and Stan Sport, and more people watching rugby free-to-air around Australia. I think, you know, re-engaging with the players.
There's no doubt that you must watch that 1991 World Cup, the semi-final, the quarter-final, semi-final, and then the final. Yeah. Please tell me you just every now and again just get the old tape out and just watch it.
I try and yell out to the kids and say, come and watch this again.
It was just so brilliant, mate.
Yeah, it's a bit of fun. I think those days, all through the 90s, where I think it was important too, and Dale would probably agree, people knew who were in the team week in, week out, because the side didn't change a great deal. You know, you always had, whether it was the Michael Iner, Nick Farr-Jones era, the David Campese, and then later on, you know, Stephen Larkham, George Gregan, Jason Little, everyone knew the players. So I think it's coming back. Dave Rennie's not making too many changes week in, week out. And, but, you know, fans have got to identify with people. You know, Tanning out of Tupou, fans know who he is now. So, which is important for young boys and girls. If they want to play a bit of sevens rugby or touch footy, that's who they're trying to play.
Hey, Timmy, you know, I get to catch up with you every now and then at Classic Wallaby stuff, and every now and then the Coogee Pavilion. Obviously, your daughter and your wife was there. Mate, I've got to ask you this, mate, and I know what you sit on the fence, because there's some blokes here that have been known to sit on the fence. So you play with David Campese. We're friends. Who's got the biggest ego out of David Campese and myself?
That's a close call. I mean, I think Campo, in the end, you didn't play as many. I think Campo played 101 test matches. I think he scored 63 tries and made 2 tackles in his career. I think, Del, you made a couple more tackles than him, and so I'd probably put you just ahead of him.
I'll take that, mate.
That's fantastic. You, mate. Look, really enjoy the match tonight. We know how passionate you are, and thank you so much for joining us on the show today, Timmy. All the best to you, brother.
Thanks, guys. Go to Wallabies.
Our butt in, Jude.
Well, I want to intervene into this conversation and also have an intervention for Gus Walland. And something came across my desk. You know,
I don't like it when things come across your desk.
The great man, Carl Stefanovic. Listen to a little bit of this audio from the Today Show.
A monk has broken his vow of celibacy and meditation after being caught shopping at Melbourne's adults-only store, Sexyland. Gus, it is understandable. People are under a lot of pressure at the moment.
I do understand that. And in every time I've ever shopped at that particular place, I've always picked up a 50% discount. So I hope he picked up that coupon before he went in there having a look around. You know what? Fair play to the big fella. It's been a long time between drinks, so why not have a crack, mate? It's a COVID world. Go, son.
Wow.
Now, Gus. I know you're a man to chase discounts, but when you're chasing a 50% discount at Sexyland, talk us through this.
Well, what is Sexyland, please?
Don't say what is sexy. You know exactly what Sexyland is.
No, I don't. I'm sexy, but what is Sexyland?
It's a place where you go for sexual bits and bobs.
It's erotica,
adult,
isn't it?
Adult
it's
entertainment.
Adults entertainment
we'll
stuff,
just say
exactly.
That, mate. That's what we say, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I didn't realise the correct terminology. But, yeah, I went down there and I was doing this particular thing for Foxtel, and I went to Sexpo, and I got a voucher when you go around to all these places for you to pick up bits and bobs. So what I did is I picked up a 50% voucher, and I thought, well, I'm going to go to Sexyland because that sounds a fun place to go. It's a bit like Disneyland, but for the adults, right? So I went in there and I thought I would try to spruce up, you know, Fix and I have been together for, at the time, about 20 years, and oh, you're always looking, goodness. You know. So I just used my voucher and came home with, you know, a, you know, show back.
But you're mate, telling, you're telling a monk that it's a long time between drinks. We know about you as well, but.
Our next guest loves the feeling of leather on his skin. But not in a weird way. Unless you consider wearing leather gloves all day in 30-degree heat as weird.
Oh, what a super catch from Brad Haddock!
He is a cricketing legend who represented Australia in all three forms of the game.
Oh, there's another one gone!
Debuting with the baggy green in 2008, he's been acting captain, scored centuries, and even served it up to those stinking palms in the Ashes. Ugh, seriously have a bath, guys. He's even won a World Cup in 2015, which was a good time to retire to the lucrative world of commentary.
Oh, one of his teammates has come running over and thrown the big high five and he's missed and got him right in the eye.
Please welcome dead set legend, Brad Haddon. Brad, you don't need gloves in here.
Yeah, there he is, Brad Haddon. Welcome to the dead set legends. How are you, mate?
Morning, boys. How you going?
Mate, thanks, we're very well. We wanted to get you on to talk all things cricket, of course, but what is happening over there in Bangladesh? In a way, I'm happy that no one picked up the media rights so we don't have to watch it.
Yeah, it was good that no one picked it up. It's been a disappointing couple of months, actually, for the Australian cricket team. They went over there with a lot of young guys, had an opportunity to have a look at some new faces and maybe press their case for a spot in the 2020 World Cup where we haven't played the best cricket in that form of the game. But I think after the 10 2020 games they've played, I don't think we've got any new answers, which is disappointing.
It's Jude. I mean, Justin Lang is just under enormous pressure at the moment. I mean, he's sitting there presiding over a team that's, you know, just hasn't delivered thus far. How do you see this playing out? Because he's got a year to go on his contract and they're all baying for blood.
Yeah, he's under pressure at the moment, and that's just part and parcel of international sport. He's been under that as a player and he's been under that as a coach. It was obviously disappointing this week that he reacted the way he did to some media reports. But I think the one thing we want to see come out of all this, you want to see your players getting better. And I think what we're seeing at the moment is we're just stalled a bit in the brand of cricket we're trying to play, and guys aren't, doesn't look like we've got better in playing those conditions. So that's a worrying sign for me.
Do you think it's hard because we've got so many forms of the game, but also we've got the IPL and obviously all these T20 comps around the world that people just aren't focused on wearing the baggy green or playing them, you know, for Australia?
Yeah, no, Del, I think they are still focused on playing for Australia. I think this was a great tour for some young kids who haven't had the opportunity to play much for Australia to really improve their game, get a taste of what international cricket's all about. The pressure on you is different to Big Bash and state cricket. There's different pressures. You're under the microscope 24/7 when you're playing for Australia. So it was just disappointing that they didn't grab their opportunity and learn from that and maybe find a couple more stars. Mitch Marsh had a really good tour, which Mitch Marsh is everyone's favourite player. He's someone you want in the team. He enjoys his cricket. He enjoys a good time. So it was good to see him improve. But apart from that, we didn't have any really good stories come out of the tour.
Josh Hazlewood, probably another positive you'd say, Hads, because he's always looked upon as obviously one of the main men of our test team. But, you know, he doesn't always get selected in the one days and the T20s. Do you reckon he's now someone you can sort of lock in for the World Cup?
Well, I would. I think he'd suit those conditions in Abu Dhabi. I think with the IPL being on those wickets before, they're going to wear and tear, so there'd be a bit of inconsistent bounce, and I think with his height and the length that he bowls, I think he'd be a real asset to the Australian team over there. I'm a huge fan of Josh Hazlewood. I think he's a three format player.
Yeah,
plays the game the right way. He's one of those guys that you want to have beside you. So I would have him as one of my top picks.
Looking ahead to the Ashes, the first test that starts in Brisbane on December 8 this year. It's going to be a fantastic series, but I mean, the English players, there really is a lot of grumblings around whether their family would be allowed to quarantine and come through and, you know, be a part of, get the exemptions to be a part of that series. How do you think that's going to play out?
Yeah, Jude, I think that'll play out in a positive way. As you know, there's a lot of theatre behind an Ashes campaign. It's different to any other series you play. And with the world we live in at the moment, yes, there's going to be quarantine restrictions, but I think in the end, common sense will prevail. I think the families will be able to come out. It's a long tour, and an Ashes is a different beast. You don't want to call that off. I know Triple M's got it back on radio again, so I know Gus is excited. So yeah.
I look forward to working with you, mate. That'd be great.
You're not involved, mate.
Oh, sorry, mate.
You're a very ordinary club decadent.
I'd love to hear, right, love to hear Del on calling the cricket coverage.
Mate, the thing is, we'd be talking about the Ashes, then he'd talk about his own innings.
He can call ball by ball from the kiddie pool like you did at that time.
That was great, Gussie. I love that.
It was good fun, and hope to have you a part of it as well, Hads. And thanks so much for joining us today, big fella. Really appreciate it.
No worries, boys.
And we've got one of the legends of Channel 7, Mel McLaughlin, on the line right now in quarantine. And Mel, how much did you enjoy Tokyo?
It was just such a very special few weeks and just a privilege. At every single time I was at a venue, you know, like the opening ceremony, for example, and in particular the big one for me was the first Boomers game against Nigeria. And I just sat there alone with no one around me and going, every day we are so lucky to be here, but they still put on a spectacular show. And yeah, I just feel really lucky.
Well, you guys did a fantastic job as well. And with the app, we didn't miss a thing. And at times it was like, what am I going to watch? It was really a real selection dilemma. But Mel, I reckon you had the interview of the games with Paddy Mills. Did you feel nervous before that? Because you absolutely nailed it. And it was one of those moments where I think everyone in Australia wanted to put their arms around him. And you just did a great job. You must look back on that and be proud.
Oh, God. Thank you for that. I just firstly felt like, you know, just like a fan, as in, you know, felt the emotion of that. And then I thought, just don't screw this up. Don't do something wrong. Like, don't let me down, brain. Yeah, it's just you and me now. Yeah. But at the end, you just know, you forget about the TV element. You just, you know, reacting as a human, as a fan that sort of knows what this team is about. So Maddie Carmichael, a colleague of mine at Seven, we talk a lot about the Boomers, and we have for years, and about Paddy Mills, not just him, but he's obviously, just such a great human. And we finally saw each other in Tokyo. And like I said to Maddie, like, we maybe were in a minority of people who knew what a just truly good human this guy is. Mm. And it feels like the secret's out now. People know. This is a guy who sneaks in after the bushfires to the country, and he goes in. He doesn't want any fanfare, and he just genuinely cares. And years ago, you'd just think he was an Aussie sports fan. He just lived in Australia because he just, you know, weighed in on all the, you know, the footy going on and the cricket and all that sort of stuff. Just a really proud Aussie. Like, I just was hoping to capture bit of what he's about, because he walked over as he was walking over. He went, "Don't cry, Mel. If you cry, I'm going to cry. Don't do it."
Well, Mel, that's Mel, it's outstanding the way that you speak too, because I think what you've done there, like, my dad was from Darnley Island, Torres Strait Island. So when you go back there, it's all about the culture. He's so proud of where he is. He's a proud Australian as well, and he always says that. But I know when he went down to the bushfires, we were down at the same time, and the Dragons were promoting and stuff, and, you know, we're here and that. But he went under the radar. And I remember about 2 years before that, he was at Culture Kings, and I lined up my young bloke, wanted to go a couple of years before, and he said, "Oh, mate, why don't you just give us a call? You know, we would have..." But he's just so nice, and he loved his Broncos, and Steve Renoff was his hero. So he is one of the great ambassadors of our country.
Mel, we lauded all our swimmers and some of the incredible achievements, the likes of Jess Fox and things. What were some of the other standout performances from the Aussies in your eyes?
Cedric Dubler. I couldn't get enough of that. Yeah, Ash Maloney. Cedric, just knowing, you know, just again, what it's about. Just off you go, mate. Just, it's not about me. It's about you. Just get there and, like, trying to fire up. You know, he's a youngster as well, Ash Maloney. And I know he's, you know, the teammates all love him, but he's, you know, he's a kid, you know. So he just seeing that behaviour was beautiful. And there was, you know, a couple of teenagers that were just ridiculous. Yeah. But one of the Japanese girls, when she looked like she felt like she'd failed. And so our Aussie girl and the American girl both just, like, dragged her up, chaired her off. They all got around her. No one celebrated their gold, silver and bronze at that point. They just got around her. You know, everyone was struck by it. That was special. And, it was a common thing.
Mel, I just want to leave you on this note. Is there any stories that you've heard from inside the village? Because I'll be honest, if I was at the Olympics, I would have been excited about competing, but I would have been excited more about being very social in the Olympic village.
Oh, Del, you know, I trust you with my life. I would tell you if I had any scandal by old gossip, for that matter. Yeah. Sorry, I got nothing.
Okay. Good on you, Mel. And I trust you, Mel.
Beautifully played, Mel. Beautifully played. Enjoy the rest of quarantine. Thanks for joining us on the Dead Set Legends. We really enjoyed your coverage and everything you guys did over there at Channel 7. And can't wait for the Paralympics as well. Yeah, all the very best to you, Mel. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. What a pleasure.
And that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you want to hear us live, you can catch us every Saturday morning on 104.9 Triple M. We'll be back next week, of course, and thanks for listening to us on the Listener app.